And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name's Ted McIntyre. This show is for the week of April 6th, 2022. The global carbon dioxide level is currently at 419.72 parts per million. 419. There are 2,827 days left until the year 2030. The clock keeps ticking. Anyhow, we have two distinct but related topics that are worth considering. And they are related because they both come under the heading of implementing the Massachusetts roadmap. So Massachusetts, as you probably know, has a roadmap bill that calls for certain targets, right? One of which is a 50% reduction in greenhouse gas emissions statewide by the year 2030 and the achievement of net zero, which is to say we capture as much carbon dioxide as we emit, net zero by the year 2050. That's all good. Turns out that right now, in the year 2022, we are faced with the task of implementing that roadmap, right? How do we go about making those goals real? And there's lots of work. But one of the things that, at least it seems to me, has become apparent is that there's an increasing need for transparency into the workings of the system that gives us electricity, right? Transparency is sort of a buzzword, right? It basically means involvement. It means information. It means that you know who made a decision, why that decision was made. It's basically good governance, right? So where we all know what's going on, and I think you will perhaps understand that better as we talk about the cases, but transparency is a buzzword for information and fairness of a process where people know what's going on. So the two topics in front of us are things we've touched on before, but the first is something called, it's got a weird name, hard to understand, esoteric, but nonetheless quite a powerful thing. This is the MOPR rule, or the minimum offer price rule, okay? Very jargony, but suffice it to say that the MOPR rule governs who gets to even participate in providing clean electricity in the future, right? It's sort of this gateway thing. And it forces the operation of this rule, as it currently stands, forces renewable energy projects to make a very high price bid in an auction that would allow them to provide power in the future, right? A couple years from now, they can provide power. They have to bid on that opportunity now. The rule forces them, the renewable energy operators, to have a very high price in an auction, which means they're going to lose. This MOPR rule has been, for the last 2 years, has been discussed as something that we should get rid of because it is inhibiting the adoption of renewable energy. The federal government agency called FERC, F-E-R-C, has been encouraging ISO New England to get rid of the rule. And we'll put in the show links. We recently had a great discussion about what is the structure, what's the relationship between FERC and ISO in the state of Massachusetts, right? Long and short, FERC is the top cop, this thing called ISO New England, the independent system operator that basically runs the grid in New England. They answer to FERC, okay? So it's kind of like the employee. And what's happened is that FERC wants to get rid of this MOPR rule that's inhibiting the adoption of renewable energy. ISO New England talked about it for 2 years, and it looked like it was all going to be, this MOPR rule was going to be eliminated, which was a good thing, until January of 2022, when all of a sudden ISO New England did an about face in a roughly 2-week period and decided that they were going to request that this crazy rule that we don't need be extended for another 2 years. It's kind of like the employee going to its boss, the, you know, ISO going to FERC and saying, no, we don't want to do what you want to do. We want to do what we want to do. Anyway, the most recent turn of the screw is that this organization called ISO New England, which basically runs the electric grid here in New England, has formally submitted to FERC a request to maintain this bad rule for another 2 years, which would essentially make companies like Vineyard Wind, that's trying to put up wind turbine facilities off the coast, they would not even be allowed to participate in the auction to be part of the grid until 2025, right? Which puts everything out terribly close to the year 2030. Anyway, with the formal request from ISO New England to FERC, FERC, that ISO be allowed to maintain this crazy rule, we now have a leverage point. That is to say, citizens in Massachusetts need to ask FERC to take action and reject the request from ISO New England to maintain this crazy rule. But that then comes to the question of what exactly, so citizens can ask FERC, right? It seems like it's a difficult thing to do. I mean, what leverage points do grassroots organizations have at FERC, right? FERC commissioners, these guys sit in Washington, D.C. This ISO New England organization seems, again, like a thing that exists outside of space and time. It just is, right? And they do stuff, and you don't know who's there, who's making the decisions, why they're making those decisions. And so, to my mind, this whole question of the MOPR rule and back and forth between FERC and ISO New England speaks to the fact that citizens in a particular state of Massachusetts needs more access to how the whole process is going, in particular, understand how the people that are running ISO New England, what pressures are on them to act one way or another. I mean, without putting too fine a spin on it, sure looks like the natural gas industry was able to bring pressure on the ISO New England decision makers, whoever they are, to keep what amounts to a sweetheart deal with natural gas operators, to keep their power plants in operation at the expense of allowing renewable energy to enter the market. Right? That's what it looks like from the outside, but who knows? Right? Maybe there's some magic, really honest-to-God justifiable reason that the ISO New England decision-makers have, but we don't see it. So there's that issue, just that how come citizens don't have more insight, at least, into what's going on with all these companies? It's difficult to understand. What you can do is to... I'll put up links. Breathe Clean North Shore is an organization on the North Shore that's having a party, literally an online party, to get together and press FERC through letters and social media to try and reverse the ISO decision, that is to say, deny ISO New England the right to extend this bad rule. But more broadly, I think that people should be asking their federal representatives here in Massachusetts, that's your state rep and Senators Markey and Warren, to enforce some kind of more clarity on what's going on. In fact, Senator Markey, to his credit, has introduced something called the Charge Act, CHARGE. I forget the acronym right now, but it has to do with providing more clarity to FERC, which is, of course, the federal agency, as to how it should be running the ISO New England and all the ISOs across the country. That's a good thing. So the other thing we as activists can do is to support Senator Markey's Charge Act, which would go some way towards increasing the transparency of these processes. Okay, so that's MOPR. I'll put up some links as to things you can do about the MOPR rule. The other interesting case that's in the news now and speaks to this question of transparency, or how come we don't have more information about how these decisions are being made, right? Literally, has to do with something called the future of gas. Okay, and this is an interesting case study. So a couple of years ago, when the roadmap bill was passed, it became apparent when the Massachusetts Climate Roadmap Bill was passed and called for dramatic reductions in greenhouse gas emissions that obviously implied dramatic reductions in the use of natural gas, right? The Attorney General's office was wise enough to say that we need a plan, right? We can't do this huge transition away from natural gas in some willy-nilly fashion. We have to think about it, especially if we're talking about timelines that go from now to 2050, right? How are we going to transition away from the use of natural gas to heat our homes and generate electricity and blah, 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 blah? So the Attorney General's office made a petition to another group, another part of the Massachusetts hierarchy called the Department of Public Utility. And the Attorney General's office said to the Department of Public Utilities, please institute a process by which you will make a plan by which the utilities will transition away from natural gas by some date certain, right? Anyway, very pragmatic kind of thing. We must make a plan. DPU, it's your job to make that plan. Please go do that. The Department of Public Utilities, and we'll get to where DPU sits in the hierarchy in a minute. DPU then went ahead and started a project called the Future of Gas. That's the acronym. If you Google Future of Gas in Massachusetts, you'll get that. The other name which this goes under is the 2080 docket. And we'll put in a link as to how you can actually look at the docket. So the docket is essentially a website where all of the publicly available PDFs that relate to this 2080 Future of Gas project reside, right? 2080 is just a numbering scheme. It's sort of round numbers, but it's just a coincidence, right? It's the 20-80 is the number in the DPU docket. So fine, DPU goes off to make this great plan about how to transition away from natural gas. But what does the DPU do? DPU evidently turned to the gas distribution companies, the utilities that are selling you the gas, and said to the utilities, okay, utilities, you go ahead, hire a consultant, give us a plan about how you are going to transition off natural gas, which in some sense is like saying, asking the utilities and gas companies to say, please tell me how you're going to put yourself out of business, right? Because that's essentially the existential threat to the gas distribution companies, is that we stop using gas, right? And so to ask the gas distribution companies to think about how they're going to transition away, of course what you're going to get back is something that's very sympathetic and preserves the lifetime of the gas distribution companies, right? Who thought something different was going to happen, right? And the reason this is interesting is because the DPU is what's called an adjudicatory agency. That is to say, the proceedings, this docket, is kind of like a court case where you're supposed to have two sides questioning each other, right? And basically, it's almost a legal kind of thing. You hear about, you know, discovery in court cases, that is to say, where each side can ask the other for information, ask questions, and you have to produce actual legally documented stuff to, if you're going to make a claim about it. Right? Turns out the DPU did not let climate activists writ large participate in this process, right? So the DPU kept the whole process, basically let the gas distribution company write its own ticket. And what's happened? Well, what's happened is that the gas companies have come back and said, well, yes, we have a plan for transitioning off gas. And that plan is to keep all those pipes in the ground, right? Which is, keep in mind, the pipes in the ground that bring you the natural gas. That's how these companies make money, right? Building, repairing those pipelines, right? The companies come back and say, oh yeah, we got a plan to transition off. What's going to happen is we're going to start using renewable gas. That is to say, methane that comes off a digester or a landfill. Okay. I'm sure there's a lot of that. And or we're going to start adding hydrogen to the pipeline. And in some future happy day, we will go from 100% methane to 100% hydrogen in your pipelines. And that's how we're going to get off natural gas. But unspoken is the fact that you're still going to have all these pipelines and the gas utilities are still going to be making money off repair of those pipelines, et cetera, et cetera. So I guess the bottom line here is that from the outside, it looks like the future of gas, or otherwise known as the 2080 docket at the DPU, is a self-serving way for the natural gas industry to continue to get money from the state and money from stakeholders to, you know, pump gas into your house, right? And there's an enormous amount of information as to why this thing of, you know, putting hydrogen into the gas pipelines that come into your house, having hydrogen in your kitchen stove kind of thing, why that's a bad idea. But the real issue and the real reason to sort of consider this is because it's very unclear how the DPU makes these decisions. Right? Again, there's no accusation of, you know, anything being wrong here. It's just that it's unclear. I mean, how could this have happened this way? Why aren't environmental voices more present? So it turns out that just to sort of ground all of this in some specifics, the way the chain of command goes is that you have Governor Baker, who is the, of course, the governor, right? He's the executor for the state. Beneath him, in the state hierarchy, there's something called the Executive Office of Energy and Environmental Affairs, which is a long acronym, EOEEA, okay? And this is actually kind of wise. I mean, all the energy and environmental stuff is all wrapped together because they're all related in an age of climate, right? How you get your energy and what you do about the environment are essentially the same question. That Executive Office of Energy and Environmental Affairs is run by Catherine Theoharides, who ostensibly has training in sustainability and good climate work. But beneath her, there are a bunch of agencies, right? So there's the most important two that we would talk about is the Department of Environmental, DOER, Department of Energy Resources, right, which is running the net zero building code stuff, and the Department of Public Utilities, which is responsible for a whole bunch of stuff related to the generation of electricity and water and natural gas. I mean, they have all comes under their bailiwick, but their mission historically of the mission of the DPU, which is part of the EOEEA, which reports to the governor, the DPU has historically been mandated to have reliable electricity at the lowest possible cost. Fair enough, right? In the age of climate, that's not enough. So the roadmap bill that was passed a year ago includes in the mission of the DPU to talk about greenhouse gas emissions reductions, that is to say CO2, which of course comes from burning natural gas. So there's this inherent tension now in the goals of the DPU between reliable, low cost, and clean energy. Right, which they, I would guess, they had not have fully ingested. The DPU itself, again, is composed of people The Department of Public Utilities is run by three commissioners. Okay, there are three people who are at the top of the pyramid, to which all the DPU people that are running hearings and doing discovery in various kinds of cases, they all look up to the commissioners who run the organization, own the DPU. Those commissioners, there's three of them. There's Matthew Nelson, there's Robert Hayden, and Cecile Frazier. Right? Again, this is public information. It's on the DOER, on the DPU website. These are the people that run the show. And it's interesting that the chair of the Department of Public Utilities started at the Department of Public Utilities in 2007, and then he worked as a supervisor of regulatory policy and planning for Eversource Energy as part of the MassSAFE program. Right? So he basically has been working for the Eversource, right? Which are the people that are trying to put the hydrogen in the natural gas pipelines. I mean, that's fine, right? But I guess what I would say is I would much prefer to have a strong environmental advocate as one of those three people. They can be a lawyer, they can know how to adjudicate cases, but there's an old saying, if all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail, right? If all of your life experience has been in using natural gas to satisfy the needs of electric generation, that makes renewable energy kind of scary. And I guess the point of dissecting the DPU down to who the commissioners are is that the DPU always is referred to as an agency that's acting and it's faceless, right? There's no, it does what it wants to do and there's no human interaction. Well, in fact, there is human interaction. And in terms of understanding how we're going to implement the roadmaps that Massachusetts has set out, we begin to ask, who are the people that are making these decisions? And how come this organization, the DPU, has allowed the utilities to write their own ticket in terms of this future of gas thing, where they propose this plan that says, oh, yeah, everything's going to be great. We'll put hydrogen in the gas lines and we'll all be fine. We'll just sail to 2050 and that's how we're going to do it. When most climate activists look at that plan and say, no, that's completely unworkable. Right? And how come their voices are not part of the decision-making that got us to a point where the state organization has promulgated these plans that are clearly, again, to my mind, clearly self-serving of the industry? So, future of gas. Now, there's an alternate. The alternate, ironically enough, the alternate is something called the future of heat. That's a bill that would mandate or would make it much easier for the utilities to continue to make money by providing other ways of heating their homes. And in particular, something you probably heard about, this idea that instead of having gas come into your house through those pipelines, you could have water from a geothermal well that's at a very fixed temperature and dramatically increases the efficiency of heat pumps, right? It's a great way to go forward. It's a way to heat whole neighborhoods at a time. It's a great alternate path toward, as opposed to maintaining natural gas with a little bit of hydrogen mixed in. So one of the things you can do is to support the Future of Heat bill. We'll put in a link to a podcast we had explaining what the Future of Heat bill is. There you go. But the top level issue is that in order to implement the roadmap, we need to begin to take a closer look at how decisions are being made in the bureaucracy of the Massachusetts state government, and to begin to align the shall we say, the DNA of those organizations, be they DPU, DOER, et cetera, to have them truly be committed to the roadmap and carbon reduction future that we all know we need to get to. Anyway, so I'll stop there. We'll put up links to what we talked about on the blog. It's at to get to those links on the blog, you have to go to the massclimateaction.org website. And across the banner, you'll look for newsletter. Pull that down. You'll see the menu down. You'll see blog and podcast. And in there is where you can find the hot links to the things that we've just discussed. If you have a question about anything or want to make a comment or suggestion, please send us an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. Let us know what we ought to be talking about. If you're listening to the show on your smartphone, you can know you can find us on all of the modern podcast distribution apps. Please ask your friends to find us. I want to thank our good friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support. And we want to close where we always close, by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, that we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. Because of that, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investments, and a price on carbon that respects environmental justice communities. So thanks for listening. Talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.